E-cigarettes and vaping devices were created with the sales pitch being the offer of means for tobacco smokers to safely wean themselves off of tobacco products. The reality and track record, yeah, it's been quite different than that original intent, hasn't it? Use of these products among youths has skyrocketed, and we've seen a sudden increase of lung injuries and deaths of those who use the products. My first guest today is here to explore why this has happened and how the situation is being dealt with. She's the executive and medical director of the New Jersey Poison Information and Education System at Rutgers Medical School and an associate professor of emergency medicine, Dr. Diane Colello. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
And learn more about the New Jersey Poison Information and Education System and this specific topic as well, njpies.org. So I guess the major question, Doctor, is these products have been out in the market for quite some time. Why just literally within the last 6 months have we seen this explosion of tragedies happen to people?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, what's happened in the last few months has really not been seen in all of the years that people have been vaping, and it's because something has clearly changed in at least a segment of the people vaping in what they're actually putting into their e-cigarette. A lot of the cases that have been reported in this outbreak are vaping either THC, which is the active component in marijuana or cannabis, or they're vaping nicotine, but it's a liquid that's produced in like a small shop in somebody's basement, sold on the black market. And so this is like a nuance, a new dimension of the vaping commerce where people are buying products that it turns out really isn't good to be inhaled and is causing acute lung injury.
And it's a matter of, well, you know, with that thought in mind, because this is something you recently wrote about too at NJ.com, along with a few other medical experts on the various aspects of this concern with vaping now. What are the requirements for anyone who produces these instruments and this product to disclose what's in the product?
I mean, it depends on how you buy it and who you buy it from. You know, the regulation is only as good as if it's sold in a legitimate mode of commerce. So a lot of what people are buying has no regulation at all because it's being purchased from a friend, you know, even just in a small shop that nobody is really regulating, or from even a drug dealer. So a lot of what we're seeing with this outbreak are just completely unregulated products.
Which also explains why school-age kids are getting it who aren't supposed to have it, because at least here in New Jersey, the legal age is 21 and over.
Right, and THC, which has, again, is that component of marijuana, has been found in up to 80% of patients with vaping lung injury, is completely illegal in New Jersey except for medical marijuana. So, you know, the majority of these exposures are due to this active component of cannabis that you can't even obtain legally at all in New Jersey.
Or as you write about, too, in your NJ.com piece, it's not the end result in the material, it's how that end result is created.
Right. This is not a problem with inhaling nicotine or inhaling THC or cannabis. People have inhaled nicotine and cannabis for a long time without this severe lung injury that we're now seeing. The problem is whatever the liquid or the solvent that chemical is put into in order to be inhaled. And we don't exactly know what it is. There's been a lot of theories. For example, some cases have been found to be dissolved in vitamin E oil. And I think there's probably a lot of different answers, but the issue is if you take an oil that's not supposed to be inhaled and then you superheat it in a device like an e-cigarette or a Juul or, you know, whatever the device you're using to cause that liquid to vaporize, then it creates these tiny little globules of oil or droplets of oil. You inhale it, it cools, it enters your lungs, and it wreaks havoc. So it's not really the actual chemical people are trying to get. It's the liquid that it's in.
So with that being said, then, can instead of looking at the product, can we ascertain more from what's happening to the victims?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of investigation is going in at the federal level, CDC, FDA, to trying to get some of samples of what people are using to be analyzed in a lab. Because, you know, if you ask a patient what they used, they generally have some idea of what it was, but they don't know the complete chemical composition. So reporting cases to the local health department, I'm sorry, to the state health department or to the poison center, we then funnel those cases to the CDC and the FDA and try to figure out exactly what that patient was exposed to.
Talking with Dr. Diane Colella, who is the Executive Medical Director of the New Jersey Poison Information and Education System at Rutgers Medical School, as well as an Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine, njpons.org is the associated website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. I guess the big fright out of all this is we were sold these products as a safe alternative, and the industry has been so fragmented, although Juul, the one company, is far and away the leader as far as the market share is concerned, but it seems like there's knockoffs, copycats, or people are almost like if you take a semi-automatic rifle and do a couple of adjustments, you can have an automatic weapon. That's what people are doing with what starts out to be a legitimate product.
Yeah, vaping nicotine in an e-cigarette was originally designed to get people addicted to tobacco cigarettes off conventional cigarettes onto this product that has less carcinogens. It doesn't have tar. You know, there's a lot about vaping that is a much better alternative for people who were smoking cigarettes and are now vaping nicotine. But there's been a lot more kids who started vaping who never would have smoked cigarettes. And, you know, and now with the ability to vape different chemicals, it's taken on a life of its own. So it does definitely have a role for health in people who are off cigarettes as a result of vaping. But there's a whole other series of consequences that have occurred as a result of this booming industry.
Which creates the dilemma, too, because if you put limitations or do an outright ban of vaping, are you going to send wannabe non-smokers back to smoking tobacco?
Exactly. I mean, a vaping ban does affect people like that who rely on vaping to keep them off cigarettes. And we have to really be conscious of that. But looking at different features of how it's sold, for example, flavoring. You know, a person who smokes cigarettes is much more likely to want to do a tobacco-flavored vape than they are to do a vape that is, you know, sweet-flavored, fruit punch, banana, bakery, passion fruit, all this stuff. And that is more likely to recruit the younger audience.
Yeah.
So looking at why do we even sell flavors? Looking at where things are sold, you know, and should it be sold in places that teenagers frequently visit? Should it be marketed in things teenagers frequently look at, like social media, things like that? You know, looking at really not allowing that phenomenon of all these increased nicotine initiators in teenagers as a result of kind of the industry piece of vaping.
I think back, it's been a long, 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 long time since I was smoking, but when I was trying to quit, I think the last thing I would want to suck on is hot bubble gum.
Right, exactly.
It just doesn't.
But if you're 17 and you are looking to try something, you know, that bubble gum might sound pretty good.
Yeah, unfortunately. So as far as the New Jersey Poison Control Center, what you alluded to before, but how are you looking to collect information and add to the clarification of all this confusion?
So the New Jersey Poison Center is collecting cases from healthcare providers who see patients in the hospital. And so we are a 24/7 hotline. We're there for the public as well as healthcare providers. Anybody who has questions about vaping or any component of this can always call us. We're there to help and provide information. The data gathering piece of what we're doing is we're collecting cases in the hospital from doctors and nurses and people taking care of them to try to add to the national investigation. We're working with the Department of Health, the New Jersey Department of Health, as well as the CDC, to compile those cases into the national investigation so we can make conclusions like 80% of these cases involve THC and try to figure out exactly what the answer is.
And again, the 800 number for the New Jersey Poison Control Center is 1-800-222-1222, 1-800-222-1222. And you also go over to NJPIES, P-I-E-S.org. We have a link up on our page as well, obviously. Learn more about this issue, and if it does apply in your personal situation, contribute to understanding what all this confusion is being, how it's being created, and hopefully bring about clarification and a lot more safety than what we've seen in these recent months from what was purported to be a safe product. We've been talking with the executive medical director of the New Jersey Poison Information and Education System at Rutgers Medical School, also an associate professor of emergency medicine, Dr. Diane Colello. Thanks so much for your insight into all this. Thanks for being here today.
Thanks for having me.